This is Dr. John Carl Schultz. He's a professor of economics, and he is the incoming director of the Institute for Research on Poverty. He has also served as a deputy assistant secretary of the Office of Tax Analysis at the U.S. Treasury Department from 1997 to 1998, and he received a Distinguished Service Award for his work at the Treasury Department during that time. He was a senior staff economist with the Council of Economic Advisers, the Executive Office of the President in Washington, D.C. in 1990 and 1991. So he's worked in both Democratic and Republican administrations. He has 20 peer-reviewed articles and book chapters on topics like the Earned Income Tax Credit, charitable giving, personal bankruptcy, savings, and tax reform. He's given talks all over the country, all over the world, Canada, England, France, Netherlands, Portugal. In the last 5 years, he presented a seminar at the Library of Congress for new members of Congress. He presented a congressional briefing on the Earned Income Tax Credit. He's testified 5 times before Congress, including testimony before the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources, the Senate Governmental Affairs Committee, and the House Ways and Means Committee. On a personal level, Dr. Schultz tells me that he resides with 2 daughters, age 5 and almost 2, 2 cats, and 1 wife. So, Dr. Schultz, we're very pleased to have you with us today. His topic is not perfect, but still pretty good, the Earned Income Tax Credit and other policies to support low-income working families.
Thank you very, very much, Karen. My heart sank when I heard the introduction to Corbett, because those of us who have to hang around with them know he's going to be insufferable now for the next 2 weeks. There's no further confirmation to that than when he wandered over during the introduction and said, "Carl, you're really going to sound like a dork next to me." But then Karen did the impossible and made it sound like I'm not a dork, and so, or maybe less of a dork, and so I'm very grateful to Karen for that. I'm also really grateful to be here. It's a real honor to address, to participate in the Family Impact Seminar. What I want to do in my brief amount of time is go over 5 things. I want to explain what the Earned Income Tax Credit is, how it's used by families. Third, I want to take you briefly through the issues one needs to think about in a policy analysis of the Earned Income Tax Credit. Fourth, compare and contrast the EITC with other alternatives to help low-wage labor markets. And lastly, say briefly a bit about state earned income tax credits and a new federal initiative. So it's an ambitious agenda for 22 minutes. What is the Earned Income Tax Credit? As you can see from the slide, it's a refundable tax credit directed primarily at low-income working families. Refundable is what makes it unusual compared to other federal tax provisions. That means that if a family doesn't owe any taxes, but still is entitled to an Earned Income Tax Credit, the Treasury will write a check for that credit. And so it's the only broad-based sort of negative income tax provision. Everything else, if you have a child credit, but don't owe any taxes, you don't get any benefit from that child credit. The Earned Income Tax Credit's unusual by being refundable. Primarily is up there because there's also a small, less than $400 credit now available for childless taxpayers. And so the bulk of the Earned Income Tax Credit is going to families with kids, but there's a small provision for childless taxpayers. There's 3 ranges to the credit: the phase-in or subsidy range, the flat range, and the phase-out range. That's going to become apparent momentarily in the next slide. And it's a big program, about $32 billion this fiscal year. And so it's larger than food stamps, larger than the programs we commonly refer to as welfare. Next slide, please. And so the EITC schedule, these 3 ranges of the credit, what we have here is in the blue is the schedule for families with 2 or more children. In pink, it's a schedule for families with 1 child. And then the yellow thing is this modest childless worker credit. And what you can see there, follow the blue line, I'll just talk about that, is as income increases from roughly $0 to $10,000, the Earned Income Tax Credit is giving you 40 cents for every dollar of earnings. So that's this phase-in range. And so a taxpayer with roughly $10,000 of earned income in the year will get an Earned Income Tax Credit if they have 2 or more children and if they file, of roughly $4,000. There's then this flat range of the credit between roughly $10,000 and $12,000, and then the credit's phased out to the tune of about 20 cents, 21 cents for every dollar that's earned. Okay, the same kind of drill with families with 1 child, the maximum credit is $2,271, and as I said, that's childless credit, the maximum credit is $341. Now the next slide's going to go up just very quickly and come down very quickly, but the point of this is these are the schedule for families with 2 or more children in 1993, the blue line, and 1999, the pink line, and you can see there's been great expansion of the earned income tax credit. The credit was first put into the tax code in 1975. It cost roughly $3.8 billion in real 1999 dollars. It's grown almost tenfold over that period. It's not a period noted for its social experimentation, the expansion of social programs, yet the earned income tax credit's grown about tenfold in real terms. There were big expansions in 1986, 1990, 1993, and another one is to be proposed in this year's budget. So the EITC's conceptual attraction, I said big expansions in 86, 90, 93. What was the political climate in those years? 86 was President Reagan, big expansion of the earned income tax credit, 1990 under President Bush, 1993 under President Clinton. So there's been a striking bipartisan consensus in support of the earned income tax credit. Where does that come from? One is a recognition that low-wage labor markets have not been working particularly well in the United States, and so this is a program that provides support to families who ostensibly are doing the right thing. In addition, these traditional forms of income support, things like welfare, food stamps, the negative income tax, give their largest payments to those with no earnings. In contrast, the earned income tax credit increases with earnings up to a point, that phase-in range, and hence it fits nicely into programs that make work pay. And making work pay has resonance, again, for both of the major, I'm sure all, political parties. I was going to say both the major ones, but I suspect everyone likes the idea of making work pay. Also, though my colleagues from the Department of Revenue at Wisconsin and the Internal Revenue Service might quarrel with this, it's relatively straightforward to administer through the tax system. All right, so how do people use the earned income tax credit? I borrowed a couple slides from a colleague of mine, Tim Smeeting, at Syracuse University. It's cited in the briefing report. But these two, I'm going to show you two pictures. This one's easy to understand. The next one's a little bit harder, but I'll try to make it clear. The first picture that I have up here suggests that the vast majority of taxpayers, 80% of taxpayers, file expecting a refund. And this is an unusual group of taxpayers. This is a group who come for tax assistance at a low-income tax assistance clinic in Chicago. So these are folks who have recently come off welfare. Generally, they're low-income, inner-city residents in Chicago coming for this nonprofit assistance to prepare their tax returns. And the point that Smeeting and co-authors, and I agree with, are making with these pictures is that the earned income tax credit has been out there long enough that people know it. They go to file tax returns expecting to receive a refund, and on the right-hand side of the slide, it's suggesting that they know that the earned income tax credit is part of the reason for this refund. There's been some ethnographic work as well that says that people have an understanding that you work more, you get more back from the tax system. Now, as their incomes increase, that understanding will be challenged, as a lot of us know that as you work more, you end up paying more. But the earned income tax credit is doing a good job delivering, enhancing the refunds of low-income working families. The next slide is the one that I sort of apologize for because it's just too busy, but since it was drawn from someone else's paper, I can just blame them. What I want you to do is focus on the red bars here. And what Smeeting, Ross, and O'Connor do is they do a set of interviews with roughly 1,000 of these clients of this low-income tax clinic, and they ask, how is your EITC or how is your tax refund going to be used? And what these scholars did is that they're very interested in categorizing uses between sort of paying bills, meeting everyday expenses, and then these sort of investment kinds of activities, where investment kinds of activities are saving it, paying for greater education, moving, buying an automobile, things that can help a family get ahead. And not surprisingly, these are fairly large dollops of money that are coming to people after filing a tax return, after April. And so, you know, these couple thousand, $3,000 in some cases, and the largest, single largest stated use for the earned income tax credit is to pay bills. Roughly half the families said that I'm going to use this to pay bills. The next two largest uses are make purchases. These purchases I think of as similar to paying bills. These are purchases of groceries, clothing, appliances, furniture. But then 12% also said that they were going to save this. Another 16%, I'm adding the small bars here, said that their highest use of this was to purchase, repair a car, pay tuition, or to move. Okay, and so Smeeting, Ross, and O'Connor express surprise about this, saying that there's a lot of people who are using the earned income tax credit as a way of trying to get ahead, to invest in improving their lives, and not surprisingly, a significant fraction using it to pay bills. The point I want to make on this, I'm not sure whether it's surprising or not, because I don't know how to compare it, because there isn't really anything like that where someone is getting this lump sum dollop of money at a certain time every year. So rather than express surprise or not, it suggests that people are using the money for the earned income tax credit in the way that at least I would have thought they were. A lot of it's going to use bills to keep up, to pay credit cards, and then there is a significant, just like there is at the middle class or wealthy people, there's significant investment desires where people want to save, they want to move, they want to purchase a car that can help them get to the job. And the earned income tax credit also facilitates those kinds of activities. All right, my third objective that I talked about for today is to go through the different aspects that need to be considered in a policy analysis of the earned income tax credit. The first I call targeting, but is some very basic questions. That is, do those who are eligible for the earned income tax credit actually receive it? Because if we have this $32 billion program that's a cornerstone of our anti-poverty efforts in the country, we want to make darn well sure that people who are eligible for it are getting it. And surprisingly, we don't know very much about this. I did a study early in the 1990s trying to look at this question and suggested at least in the early 1990s, the EITC appears to get pretty high marks on this, about between sort of 80 and to 86% of those who are eligible for the credit were receiving it at the time. But the earned income credit has expanded a lot since then, and the nature of low-wage labor markets has changed a lot since then. And frankly, we don't know whether the earned income tax credit is getting to those who it's intended to. My guess is we're still in this 80% ballpark, but we don't know. We do know that roughly half the benefits are going to taxpayers with incomes below the poverty line, so it's getting a very poor kind of group. If you remembered from, which undoubtedly you can't, from the pictures that I showed of this earned income tax schedule, for families with two or more children, the credit extends up to families with $30,000. So it's entirely possible that lots of families with incomes above the poverty line, whether near poor or almost comfortably middle class, are also getting the earned income tax credit. But roughly half the benefits are going to taxpayers with incomes below the poverty line. Two-thirds are going to workers with wages in the bottom quarter of the wage distribution, and virtually the entire credit is going to workers with wages below the median. As Karen mentioned, I spent a fair bit of time in Washington over my career, and there are actually people at one time who would argue that the earned income tax credit's fundamentally flawed because there could be some cat who works 1 hour a year, earns $19,000 for that hour, and is getting a big earned income tax credit. Okay, well, conceptually possible, it doesn't happen, all right? In 1997, the earned income tax credit raised the incomes of 4.3 million persons above the poverty line. This is ignoring any sorts of behavioral responses to the credit, which I'm going to talk about momentarily. But on these targeting kinds of things, I think the earned income tax credit does quite well. Now, on labor markets. There are several studies that find the earned income tax credit has a modest positive effect on labor market participation. One study that I was involved in suggested that the 1993 expansion of the earned income tax credit increased women's labor force participation, let me be explicit, this labor force participation of single moms by about 3 percentage points. Okay, that's not a, oh my gosh, this thing is a silver bullet for the problems of low-wage labor market kind of result. But nevertheless has modest positive effects on labor market participation. Another study suggests that increases in the earned income tax credit over the 1990s can account for about a third to half of the increase in the employment rate of single mothers since the mid-1980s. It also appears to have little negative effect on the hours of work of those who already work, and has small increases in the rates of female headship, that is, earned income tax credit provides resources for single parent families and consequently makes it a little bit easier for those families to get by. All right, the third issue is earned income tax credit administration and compliance. And here there is good news and bad news. The good news is that most EITC recipients would file tax returns even in the absence of the credit to get back withheld taxes or other kinds of things. So the incremental cost of administering the credit is very low. The bad news is that at least in the federal, for the federal credit, roughly a quarter of EITC payments appear to be going to taxpayers that are technically not eligible for the credit. This is a major, major concern for many who worry and think about the earned income tax credit. The issue is, to get the earned income tax credit, you have to have a kid living with you for, if they're your child, more than half the year, if they're a foster child, for the full year. You have to have income in the designated range. Then there's some more technical rules. And what's happening is that a lot of EITC qualifying children don't end up living with the person who's claiming them. It can be situations like a couple is split. The divorce agreement says the non-custodial parent gets to claim the kid for the purposes of the dependent exemption, but that doesn't mean that the non-custodial parent can claim the kid for the earned income tax credit. It's hard for taxpayers to know those kinds of rules without reading these very long booklets explaining the rules. And so people mess up on this. There can be more obnoxious kinds of non-compliance where kids' social security numbers are sold to complete strangers. But this compliance problem is a serious one with the earned income tax credit. It's not particularly, I want to be clear here that we devote a very few dollars to administering the earned income tax credit and have relatively high non-compliance. When you compare it to programs, the program formerly known as AFDC, we devote a lot of dollars to administering it, and compliance rates are somewhat better. And there's a fundamental trade-off there, I believe. And with the earned income tax credit, we have a program that does a lot of good, but also has this particular compliance problem. All right, how does it compare to alternative policies? My fourth thing that I want to talk about. The earned income tax credit and the minimum wage. There are some who like to view these as alternative kinds of policies. I like the earned income tax credit relative to the minimum wage because it's more tightly targeted on low-income families. A study that we cite in the briefing report finds that only 21% of the benefit of the minimum wage increase goes to families with incomes to poverty ratios of under 1.25. In contrast, I told you that about half the expenditure of the earned income tax credit goes to families with incomes below the poverty line. That same study showed that 38% of minimum wage increases go to families with incomes to poverty levels of greater than 3. That is, a lot of minimum wage, a lot of the benefits of the minimum wage will go to children from affluent families working in movie theaters, at fast food, and things like that. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't want to suggest it is, but the EITC is more tightly targeted to low-income families. Also, one worries about with the minimum wage that it's going to make it hard to employ people. That is, it raises the cost of employment, and so the minimum wage increases may have negative employment effects. That's a controversial topic in the academic literature on the topic, or a controversial proposition, but the conceptual effects are quite clear. Now, the policies coexist in the U.S., but they are not complementary policies. I view them as substitutes, and most appropriately thought of as substitutes. What about the earned income tax credit and targeted hiring subsidies? By targeted hiring subsidies, the U.S. has had these for many years. I mean things like the targeted jobs tax credit, the work opportunity tax credit, the welfare to work tax credit. What these are bonuses, incentives for employers to hire hard-to-employ groups. And so it'll tell an employer that hire this person, we'll give you $4,000 for every $10,000 of wages that you pay a particular designated group. These things have been criticized as being inframarginal. That's a jargon for they subsidize hiring that would have happened anyway, and so policy analysts don't like that very much. Sometimes people worry that they generate jobs for one disadvantaged group at the expense of another. They may possibly even stigmatize workers. That is, puts a label on workers that this person's going to be a really tough employee and may in fact make it harder to employ these. I actually view these as complementary policies. I don't think these criticisms or these concerns have been grounded well in the literature. And this is a very complementary policy to the earned income tax credit. The earned income tax credit should be thought of as a supply-side policy, trying to lure or make work pay, induce people into the labor market. These targeted hiring subsidies are demand-side subsidies, telling employers, go out, we'll provide incentives for you to hire a particular type of workers, and they work well together. They're hand in glove. These, although I'm not going to say much more about it because I'm very short on time, I think this is the next frontier for kind of work on low-wage labor markets. There's a big flurry of work on targeted hiring subsidies in the early 1970s. There's been relatively little on them since. I think they're important, and I think we should be investing more. Third, it would be the earned income tax credit and payroll tax relief. Payroll tax relief usually starts from this proposition that about three-quarters of U.S. taxpayers pay more in payroll taxes than they do in individual income taxes. Therefore, let's reduce payroll taxes. I'm worried about that because it's going to be hard to reduce payroll taxes administratively for people who hold multiple jobs either during the year or at the same time. Hard to know which job to give the relief for. And I also worry about altering the calculus, if you will, on Social Security. The payroll taxes are the taxes that fund the Social Security program, and by providing payroll tax relief to low-income workers, I'm afraid there'll be a backlash about trying to trim Social Security payments to low-wage workers, which I think would be a big, big problem. Last two slides. A bunch of states have earned income tax credits. I put them up on the slide here. There's 10 of them. You'll see there's 11 entries, and so the briefing report says 11 states have them. It just shows that Carl can't count. I'm pretty good at math. I'm not so great at counting. Seven states have refundable credits. They're listed here. Wisconsin is one of them. Most states, but not Wisconsin, also makes credits available to workers without qualifying children. Third, the credits on the state systems tend to be piggyback credits on the federal system. So all but one state, namely Minnesota, will give a piggyback credit. So in Kansas, for instance, 10% of the federal credit. In Wisconsin, we're the only state in the country that has a three-tiered EITC. 4% of the federal credit for families with one child, 14% for families with two children, and 43% for families with three or more children. You'll see the president is proposing to do that federally. So as once again, Wisconsin's out ahead of the rest of the country. The maximum from this $4,000 to roughly $4,500 for families with three or more children. He's proposing to reduce EITC marriage penalties for married two-earner couples. How he's doing that is to expand that flat section of the credit and slow the phase-out rate for married couples with two earners for earned income tax credit. And last, trying to increase the savings incentives by ignoring IRA and 401 contributions and calculating EITC income. That's just kind of tax policy wonk. Happy to answer questions about that. Okay, that's what I wanted to tell you about the earned income tax credit.